Case this morning is Monroe versus City of Seattle.
My name is Jack Sheridan, and I represent Ms. Monroe. I would like to reserve 2 minutes. May it please the court. We attorneys who are on the front lines trying these civil rights cases know that there's something terribly wrong with the justice system as applied to black men and women today. We see it we know that it's just as prevalent in society in general. We know that there is a strong sense of injustice. And this is one of those cases where there was a great injustice. There was an injustice because there was implicit bias in the jury, that we weren't allowed to have a jury instruction that would have given us a fair shot of helping those persons on the panel confront implicit bias. We know that once the deliberations began with an unfettered white and Asian American jury panel, the only black juror on the panel left briefly during deliberations at a time when three jurors, he and two white jurors, had voted that there was, in fact, failure to accommodate. He goes to the bathroom. As he's coming out, he hears the sounds of people talking. When he comes out of that bathroom, he knows that there's been something going on by the facial expressions and everybody stops talking. And then there's suddenly a vote change. Let's have a vote, and the vote, one of the white jurors changes her vote without any deliberation or discussion in his presence, and the Asian American foreperson hits the buzzer and the case is over.
So that's what, circumstantial evidence?
Yes, it is circumstantial evidence. It is
strong. But why is that enough? The rule is you can't have deliberations without all the jurors. The rule is not you can't have conversations without all the jurors. Don't you have to show that there was a factual conversation about deliberation to get anywhere with that argument?
No.
Otherwise,
because if you require direct evidence, you're putting us in the same position that we used to be put in before in the early days of the civil rights legislation, when we had to talk about only circumstantial evidence isn't enough. We know that circumstantial evidence is just as strong as direct evidence, and we know that there's no other way to go.
Did you ask the court to interview the jurors?
Well, the jurors had already left. What actually happened is we saw the
only black. But if this were identified, would it be proper for the trial court to question the jurors individually, to ask the direct question simply, was any substance of the case discussed while that juror was in the restroom?
Yes. In the perfect world,
But we don't have that evidence. We don't have anyone answering in the affirmative. So we have no direct evidence.
You have no direct evidence, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in criminal cases. It doesn't matter in civil cases. Why should you have direct evidence when there's juror misconduct?
Otherwise it inheres in the verdict.
Well, it only inheres in the verdict if it pertains to the content of the deliberations, and it doesn't. We are focusing on the Elmore standard. We're focusing on whether or not the facts that relate to the process. We're focused on the conduct of the jurors and the process of the deliberations rather than on the content of their discussions. This is not. Any of the facts I've just told you do not inure in the verdict. The two-page declaration that we gave you, the first page, of course, his opinions inure in the verdict. When he talks about it, but his vote does not, because it's important to know the setting. It's important for you and the trial judge to understand the setting. But look at the world we live in. Judge Ehrlich is a great judge. He's a nice fellow. But did you see, you saw on the record what he said? He said he questioned the motive of the black juror who signed the sworn statement, that maybe it was him that has implicit bias. This is how wounded we are as a culture. This is how we are just like, if you, I don't know if you saw the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary. She was going in front of a court, a Supreme Court of men, and trying to convince them that there was such a thing as sex discrimination. That she, that's what she says in her documentary, and that's where we are here. We're in a world where we have not accepted the reality that there is something terribly wrong, and we as lawyers and judges have to do something about it. And this is as good as it's going to get. There is one black juror who knows something fishy went on, and he wasn't allowed to deliberate. And I caught him not in the courtroom at the moment. That's not how the facts shaped up. But we should all care that black America has great reservations about whether they can get a fair trial. This case has the opportunity to have historical significance to say, we agree there's something terribly wrong and we have to fix it. This is not perfect. We don't have everybody else admitting that, yes, our intention was implicit bias. How could they say there's implicit bias when they haven't been instructed on it? They don't even know it themselves. That's what implicit bias is about. It is Judge Ehrlich's implicit bias, where he's blaming the lone person who stood up to say there's something wrong. Judge Ehrlich is questioning his bias, but those people that went in there that have that knee-jerk reaction that we all know we have, they didn't know that they were acting in implicit bias.
Are there any jurisdictions that have imposed the mandatory requirement for such a...
Yes, and that's what we were citing federal cases. We cited to Judge Ehrlich federal cases that had been ahead of Washington. I'm so used to us being the leaders in civil rights.
Was this before the trial, before the instructions were given, or in connection with the mistrial motion?
Well, I think, I can't say for sure that I linked the implicit bias argument at the time that I moved for a new trial, but I think I did. I'd have to go back and look at the record. But
you're saying you did propose one before the jury was sent out to deliberate.
Yes, instruction number 4 was an implicit bias instruction. There was actually an instruction number 3 that was supposed to be given at voir dire, but we kind of skipped past it without... I blame myself. I don't think we made a case to the judge to give him a chance to rule against it at the beginning. So on appeal, it's jury instruction number 4. But that's where we live. We live in a world where we now know. I mean, our Supreme Court has now approved the implicit bias instruction.
So is your rationale for reversal is reversed because the implicit bias instruction was not given, or because of what happened in the jury as detailed by?
Yes.
Or both together?
Both of those, because if we had the implicit bias instruction, I would have had the ability to help them, the white jurors, understand that when you go in there, you're looking at a black woman. I want you to
but
just...
But you had the opportunity to argue that anyway, counsel.
It doesn't matter. I've been doing this for years. There's a big difference. I just did one out in October in Eastern Washington where I got an implicit bias instruction. It makes all the difference because the judge says it's the law. It's not the lawyer's argument. But just and there's not much time left, but picture... Had this been a white woman locked in the bathroom with a big black man yelling at her, who would have found that there wasn't a problem? But because she was black, they never got past it.
One short question before you sit
yes.
down about the setting. What is this business with the buzzer? I don't recall hearing of juries that have buzzers.
It's on page 1 and 2 of our juror's declaration. So basically the foreperson, as soon as the verdict is said, so it goes from 3 to now it's 10 and 2, vote, boom, buzzer, call the judge.
Does every jury that's deliberating have a buzzer now?
I've never been in one. I just know the clerk tells me that they buzzed and the verdict's in, but I don't actually
they
know.
They buzzed the clerk.
They buzzed the clerk.
There's a bailiff, I mean.
Yeah, but there was no further deliberations. That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Judge. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Sarah Tolstra, and I'm an assistant city attorney for the City of Seattle. After Ms. Monroe showed up to work on February 8, 2013, behaved bizarrely, refused to complete a fit-for-duty exam, and walked off the job, SDOT investigated her behavior and ultimately terminated her employment. During the investigation and discipline process, she never mentioned her disability or a need for accommodation, despite knowing how to do so after she tested positive for drugs not prescribed for her in a fit-for-duty exam in 2011. Nevertheless, the narrative at trial was that SDOT failed to accommodate her and fired her because of her disability. Yet Ms. Monroe herself testified that she never requested accommodation or mentioned her disability while at SDOT, and she didn't believe there was anything SDOT should have done to accommodate her disability that it didn't do, and admitted her disability did not affect the events of February 8th. The jury rejected the trial narrative and returned a defense verdict. The speculation of one juror that deliberation occurred while he was in the restroom is insufficient to overturn this verdict, as are the claimed instructional and evidentiary errors. Regarding the alleged
juror. So is it too late for us to go back and tell the judge to go interview the jurors and find out if they in fact gave a false verdict?
I think interviewing the jurors in this case would adhere in the verdict, Your Honor. And
well, the question would be, while the juror X was in the restroom, did you in fact continue to discuss the substance of the case? Don't have to ask them what was said, just did you or did you not?
I think that what counsel is arguing is a little bit beyond that, which is not just they deliberated while I was in the restroom, but they convinced one juror to change her vote while I was in the restroom. And that's the substance of
But the rule would be violated if there were deliberations of any kind with him out of the room. So there's just a threshold question, which I take it, you know, if it was asked before the jury was dismissed, we may not have that issue in this case, at least.
We might not have this issue in this case, Your Honor, but I think it's important also to remember that Ms. Monroe bears the burden of showing that juror misconduct occurred, and that determination lies within the discretion of the trial court. Counsel's talked a lot about circumstantial evidence, but the standard is a strong affirmative showing of misconduct is necessary in order to overcome the policy favoring stable and certain verdicts. It's the Balasag case. Mr. Neal's speculation as to what went on while he was in the restroom for a few minutes falls far short of a strong affirmative showing of misconduct. Trial court did not abuse its discretion in declining to find misconduct based on this speculation, particularly since we presume that jurors follow the court's instructions. It was also correct for the trial court to determine that any misconduct, if it did occur, inhered in the verdict and could not be considered. As I said, the affidavit hinges on the presumption that that jurors convinced this one juror to change her mind while he was in the restroom, not that she may have changed her mind on her own earlier during deliberations. That's the crux of this affidavit. And that.
What about the implicit bias instruction?
Sure.
One was offered but refused, or what?
Sure. The implicit bias, counsel proposed implicit bias instructions, and the court declined.
The city argued, or state, I guess it is, Seattle, right?
Yes.
Argued against giving one?
The city argued against giving the implicit bias instruction. The city argued that the pattern instruction that the court gives, and did give in this case, it's instruction number one, instructed the jury to reach its decision not on sympathy, bias, or personal preference, and to act impartially. There was also an oral version of this instruction given before opening statements, and another oral instruction was given after closing, telling jurors to respect each other's opinions.
Well, but hasn't the Supreme Court recently just promoted an implicit bias instruction as something that should be given? Or am I mistaking my memory here?
Are you talking about the recent rule about peremptory challenges?
Maybe that's what I'm talking about. But I mean, in other words, is that what you just said, what the city argued, is that a standard policy on the part of the city of Seattle to oppose an implicit bias instruction in every case?
I don't know that it is a standard policy.
But you don't know that it isn't either.
That's true, Your Honor.
In this case,
the city believed that the standard instruction that the judge was giving was adequate to tell the jurors to act impartially.
Well, you say in this case. I mean, I would think that in a case where there's a African-American plaintiff and a diverse makeup of people on the jury, that it might be a very good occasion in which to use an implicit bias instruction.
Potentially, Your Honor.
But in other words, so the city, at least according to what you're telling me, is not excited about implicit bias instructions.
I prefer
to not have them. I mean, you don't really see any good reason to have one and just use the standard instruction.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
What about if you had to try a case today? Would you offer one?
I believe that today, Your Honor, there is a video shown to all prospective jurors before they're called in the jury pool room that talks about implicit bias.
Was that not the case with this?
I do not believe that it was the case at the time of this case. But in any event, Ms. Monroe certainly was not prejudiced by the refusal to give her instruction. Counsel urged the jurors to examine their own implicit bias during closing argument. And given that Ms. Monroe neither sought nor believed she needed an accommodation at SDOT, and given the comprehensive evidence that the events of February 8th were the sole reason for her termination, the lack of such an instruction could have had no prejudicial effect. We also recently submitted the recent unpublished decision in Johnson v. Seattle Public Utilities, where another panel of this court addressed an identical instruction proposed by counsel in another case and determined that the declining to give this instruction was not an abuse of discretion, and that the fact that the trial court in that case gave an identical instruction one about the don't act on sympathy bias or personal preference, act impartially, showed no prejudice. And we would argue that the reasoning of that panel would be persuasive here. Do your honors have any other questions about any of the other issues in this case?
Sounds like no.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Your honors, the answer is yes. There is an implicit bias instruction now that's incorporated into the introductory instructions in the pattern instructions. The other answer is no.
Is that statewide or King County?
It's the implicit bias instruction is in the WIPI, so that's statewide. The video, I think, is King County. And I think at the time that we tried the case, the federal district courts had done videos like that, and certain federal district courts had done it, but it didn't exist for Ms. Monroe. And then just very briefly, I just wanted to point out, I think it's adequately briefed, so it need not be brought up in depth, but how she was behaving was to justify her having to get this this test was really that she was dancing and humming. And white persons interpreted that as being bizarre behavior. But I want to suggest that that also be viewed in the circumstances of our times, that you are sitting in a Starbucks while being black, you are driving while black, you are walking with a hoodie while black. These are issues that need to be addressed, and I hope this court will do it. Thank you.
Would you take a second and,
yes,
and explore a little more for me? The instruction number one, which does say don't leave your prejudices out, and combine with your argument, what's missing from that? If we've got the opening general instruction and your very effective argument, what did the jury miss?
What's missing in this case, or do you mean a fix?
This case.
In this case, that introductory instruction was not effective. Implicit bias is nothing to do with what counsel told you. Implicit bias has to do with the knee-jerk reactions, the things that we do without thinking about it.
But you made that argument.
But
right?
Being a trial lawyer, I've argued it many times. The first time it took hold was when a judge, before the WIPI came out, I had a judge give the implicit bias instruction, and I could say to the jury, the judge says this is what you must do, not what I think. I'm just another guy. And they're instructed not to listen to what I say. It's only argument. So it does have teeth, and it does matter, and it mattered here. Thank you.
Thank you. Last case this morning is...